This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Taiwan, the People's Republic of China. Remarks by the president in these last days from the Politico reporting. President Joe Biden has further stoked U.S.-China tensions by unambiguously pledging a U.S. military response if China tries to invade Taiwan. The U.S. military would defend Taiwan, quote, if in fact there was an unprecedented attack, end quote, on the self-governing island, Mr. Biden said in an interview that aired on CBS 60 Minutes. Gordon Chang, at Gordon G. Chang, my colleague and co-host, and we welcome Steve Yates, our colleague. Steve is right now going to help us understand that the president has said this several times, and we're trying to learn from each time, especially from the point of view of the People's Republic of China, in these last weeks before the 20th Party Congress meets to look to the future. Steve is the chair of the America First Policy Institute's New China Policy Initiative. Steve, a very good evening to you. The president has repeated remarks that he's made before, so we need a little definition here. Is this part of the strategic ambiguity policy followed by many presidents heretofore, or is it something new? The word unprecedented suggests that there's more here than at first is ordinary. Good evening to you, Steve.
Well, good evening, John. Well, unfortunately, it's true that we have had four separate episodes on the record where the commander in chief, the president of the United States, has very clearly said that if China were to attack Taiwan, the United States would intervene to defend Taiwan. And he framed that as consistent with the Taiwan Relations Act and many, many decades of commitments that have been made by the U.S. Congress, by successive presidents, publicly or privately. That's the way President Biden has framed it. But sadly, each time he has done this, anonymous staff have rushed to the fore to correct the president and correct the record, and going away from clarity back into ambiguity, suggesting that there's been no change in policy, unfortunately signaling to the Chinese that they now have control over those who are controlling the president. I think that's a very corrosive signal and probably increases the risks of a conflict.
Steve, just a note here, strategic ambiguity. Is that a policy that the Biden administration acknowledges is in place, or have they retired it? Have they said anything about it?
The Biden administration has asserted that that has continued, but that's speaking of the staffers to the president in the White House and across the administration. It is the president himself who has spoken repeatedly in clarity. And so the administration across the board, if one were to include the president in his own administration, is not on the same sheet of music with regard to this policy.
Gordon, to look at history, does strategic ambiguity, that policy in place, is that regarded as successful these many decades?
It has been regarded as successful, John, because China has not invaded. So clearly peace has been maintained. But we've got to remember that strategic ambiguity worked in a benign period, and we are no longer in a benign period.
You have a question for Steve, Gordon.
Steve, what you describe sounds to me like a constitutional coup, because the Constitution makes the president the commander in chief. But if we move beyond that for a moment and look at what Taiwan and what China are, how they view this, because they see the disarray, what do you think the effect is in Beijing and Taipei?
In Beijing, unfortunately, I think it is encouraging to them to see the administration repeatedly stumble in public about what its policy is. And the net outcome is watering down what the U.S. response to such a challenge would be in the direction that Beijing probably seeks, one where it is unclear and maybe less likely that an American intervention would occur if they were to invade or attack Taiwan along the lines of what Russia has done to Ukraine. In Taiwan, I think that they hang very, very closely to the words of the president. Perhaps they don't see as clearly how corrosive the anonymous White House staffers' role has been in muddying those waters. And they might overestimate what they can depend upon from this administration if the president and those who are appointed to serve him are not in sync.
A puzzle, Steve, about how Beijing regards this. We've had a recent significant event of the meeting between Xi Jinping, first time outside of the Beijing compound, to my knowledge, since the pandemic, traveling to Central Asia to meet with Vladimir Putin. Is this one episode doesn't make a policy, but the interpretation in Europe and the U.S. has been that this has strengthened Xi's hands because it's quite clear that Russia regards him as the vital partner. He's called it No Limits, but Russia now leaning on this partnership for the foreseeable future, selling energy, getting equipment from China, high tech, all the things that are now impossible because of the sanctions. So that meeting, did that strengthen China when it comes to Taiwan, or is this a separate world from Xi Jinping's thinking?
Well, I think we can draw a reasonable straight line from Vladimir Putin's visit to China during the Olympics and the announcement of this partnership without limits to the meetings that have just been witnessed. What China and Russia are doing, and one might include Iran into that mix, is cultivating an axis that is able to exchange the mutual needs among themselves without being at too great a risk of the free world denying them access to those needs or imposing penalties upon them with sanctions. So I think that it is actually very important to China, as it is to Russia, that they're able to further the revisionist territorial claims together, somewhat with impunity, and that they insulate against the financial measures that have been targeted at Russia being aimed at China and perhaps also at Iran.
Gordon, you have a question for Steve.
Steve, at the summit meeting of this Shanghai Cooperation Organization, we had, as you mentioned, Iran actually joined the SCO. We had India there in the form of Prime Minister Narendra Modi. Do you see the Shanghai Cooperation Organization as gelling, or is it merely just a talk shop, as some people have said?
I see it as just a convenient location for the titans of this evil triad to get together and meet. I don't see the SCO as an entity of itself of strategic importance. I do think that India's participation in all of this is troubling, not because we have grave risk to our national interests from India, but it's indicative that weakness and disarray is provocative, that it actually lets loose this kind of coalition to form a parallel universe to exist against the interests of the free world, but also against the interests of those who believe in human rights, free people, free markets, and the system of commerce that has allowed these countries to rise over the last century. So I think it's more a location and convening of convenience of these people that rather than a strengthening entity of itself.
Steve, quickly, 30 seconds. Each time the president has mentioned that he will defend Taiwan, does it bolster or make Taiwan despair in general, the population, not the leadership?
I think the population is bolstered when they hear the president speak very deliberately and directly about this. I think that the problem is that it undermines the confidence that our allies in Japan can have about what would happen. And it encourages China to be more bold. And I think the people of Taiwan might not see it as clearly as those of us who watch the White House closely do.
Steve Yates, chair of the America First Policy Institute's New China Policy. Gordon Chang at Gordon G. Chang. I'm John Bash.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.